There are probably no recordings as enigmatic, as elusive, as desired by jazz aficionados as the wax cylinders purportedly made by Buddy Bolden, the legendary first man of jazz. Jazz scholar and musician David Sager has been thinking seriously lately about how Bolden and his band might have sounded, taking as evidence musical styles of the day, commercial sound recordings, photographs, and other surviving artifacts. By day, David Sager works at the Library of Congress, where he is helping to create the library's National Jukebox, a digital repository of acoustical recordings. By night and weekends, David is a professional trombonist who lived in New Orleans for 12 years. You've probably heard his Grammy-nominated King Oliver off the record set. You'll probably attend the party tomorrow night to release Cabaret Echoes, New Orleans Jazzers at Work, which was produced in album notes written by David. And if there's any justice in the world whatsoever, it too will be nominated for at least one, hopefully two Grammys. Please welcome our colleague and friend, David Sager.
Thank you. Let's see, how do we get this back up? Is it supposed to be on? It's a nice blue. It's a very
nice. Very nice blue.
But it's not the blue I was hoping for.
It was up just a minute ago.
Did your computer shut off, Dave? Do you have your power supply, Dave?
I don't have a power supply.
Okay.
Cursor out of the way. Thank you. It is nearly impossible to speak of Buddy Bolden without invoking myth and exaggeration. The reasons are obvious enough. Bolden, an African-American cornetist in early 20th century New Orleans, played a passionate, embryonic version of what would become known as jazz. He is not supposed to be on that slide. There we go. He is generally considered to be the man who first combined instrumental dance music with blues and ragtime melodies. His contemporaries recalled that he played in a loud, rough manner and could be heard miles away. Tales of his prowess, musical and otherwise, stand tall and reach out to us across the century. Both he and his band are remembered for playing blues-drenched melodies and lively, hot numbers, sometimes sung with obscene lyrics. And his audience, a sweating mass of dancing humanity, prostitutes, pimps, and their neighbors, who gathered at places like the Union Sons Hall, located on Rampart Street near Perdido. It was at this hall where the band created a sensation with their raucous rendition of Funky Butt, a musical tribute to the foul odor in the place. And Union Sons Hall would soon become known as Funky Butt Hall. Another story tells of how Bolden used sheer loudness to steal the audience from a competing orchestra led by John Robichaux, who was playing at a nearby venue. From his bandstand at Johnson Park, Bolden's raucous playing could be heard over the more polite sounds of Robichaux's music reading orchestra playing at nearby Lincoln Park. Here is an excerpt of the 1905 Columbia Orchestra playing Woe You Heifer, a piece that Robichaux featured. And the Columbia Orchestra is reading from a copy of the same stock arrangement that was in Robichaux's library.
¶¶
Charles Buddy Bolden was born in New Orleans on September 6, 1877, to Alice and Westmore Bolden. West Bolden, a drayman, died when young Charlie, or Buddy, was a child. And while in his teens, Buddy learned the cornet from Manuel Hall, a suitor of Alice Bolden's. Bolden formed his own band in the late 1890s. Bolden's career lasted only a short while, from around 1898 to 1907, when following a series of violent acts and an arrest, he was committed to the Louisiana State Insane Asylum at Jackson, Louisiana, where he frittered away his final 24 years, dying in November of 1931. No recordings are known to exist of his playing, and for years a persistent rumor that he recorded a wax cylinder with his band kept New Orleans jazz aficionados and collectors on the lookout. According to the band's trombonist, Willie Cornish, Bolden and his group made the cylinder around 1898, and the cylinder has become something of a legend itself. Most of what we know to be true about Bolden is the result of painstaking research done by Donald M. Marquis, whose 1978 work, In Search of Buddy Bolden, did much to clear up the many misconceptions about this man. Marquis has subsequently learned that it was a local merchant named Oscar Zahn who recorded the Bolden Band on his Edison phonograph. Zahn operated a saloon in the vicinity of Bolden's musical activities and apparently got acquainted with him. Unfortunately, Zahn's collection of cylinders languished for years in a storage shed that was torn down in the early 1960s. Even if the cylinder had been recovered in time, it would no doubt be unplayable due to the ravages of New Orleans humidity and mold. While I cannot play the Bolden cylinder for you, I can share some recordings and thoughts that I think will help put the Bolden Band in perspective as far as repertoire, style, instrumentation, and conventional dance music are concerned. And I say conventional because in addition to playing loud, rough music by ear, Bolden's band was often employed at more polite dances where no liquor was served, men removed their hats, and popular dances were danced. For starters, let's listen to some excerpts to orient us to what Bolden's cornet style was thought to be like. We'll hear four versions of the old song, Careless Love, which Bolden is known to have played. First is from a 1925 recording made here in New Orleans by the original Tuxedo Jazz Orchestra, with Kid Shots Madison and Oscar Celestin on cornets. Following that, we'll hear from the English cornetist Humphrey Littleton, taken from a BBC broadcast documentary on Bolden, in which Littleton attempted to recreate Bolden's sound. Next, we'll hear from Bunk Johnson, whose claim to have worked in Bolden's band has been disputed, but Johnson undoubtedly heard and admired Bolden. And finally, we'll hear from Wooden Joe Nicholas, a cornetist and clarinetist who knew Bolden and admired him and took up the cornet because of Bolden's influence. Trombonist Bill Matthews, who was a teenager when Bolden was active, said that Buddy could play as sweet as he could play loud. He had a moan in his cornet that went all through you. He made it sound just like a Baptist preacher. Bolden was well known as a church-going Baptist.
My Lord, want to move this weekend rain.
Several of Bolden's contemporaries said that his cornet style foreshadowed that of Freddie Keppard, born in New Orleans in 1890. Here is a brief taste of Keppard's exhibitionistic style. Here are a few important points to keep in mind as we listen to some more recorded excerpts. Buddy Bolden was active at a time and place where the old style dances like the mazurka, polka, schottische, lancers, and quadrille were still very popular. Also, jazz did not originate with the kind of dance rhythms found on classic 1920s jazz records. Jazz historian and musician Daniel Hardy puts this well into perspective when he mentions that if you happened to enter the Funky Butt Hall on a Saturday evening in 1900, you might have heard a blues, but just as likely they would have been dancing an exuberant waltz or a jazzed-up quadrille. As far as reading music was concerned, Bolden, according to New Orleans Creole cornetist Peter Bocage, could not read a note as big as a house. But others, such as his frequent violinist Manuel Mineta, said Bolden could in fact read music. My guess is that Buddy Bolden was what New Orleans musicians often referred to as a music speller, one who could read music, but with effort and deliberation, which brings us to our third point to keep in mind, that even if the musicians did not read music very well, they still imitated the standardized roles of their respective instruments. Some clues about the style of the Bolden Band may be gleaned from the one known photograph of the group taken somewhere around 1903 or 4 or maybe 5. The picture shows him with his band, or more accurately put, orchestra. It is a very typical early 1900s stripped-down dance orchestra, common to New Orleans and known locally as a string band. This instrumentation consisted of the essential voices needed to realize a publisher's stock dance orchestration. Incidentally, the photograph is often shown this way. Both ways are legitimate, and we can all discuss it later, perhaps over a beer. In an ensemble like this, the violin is the default lead instrument, and Bolden is known to have usually used a violinist, but here he is pictured with two clarinetists, apparently one to play the violin lead. Cornette would play harmonies and background figures, as well as some lead. This is very different from the cornetist's role in a brass band or military band, where the cornet carries the lead most of the time. The following excerpts are to illustrate some differences between bands and orchestras. In playing dance music, it was very important to mark the rhythm by accentuating the afterbeats, or the pa in pa. Bands did this through the use of French horns or alto horns, achieving kind of a regimental sound, while orchestras achieved a more flexible sounding rhythm through the use of viola and piano. We will hear some excerpts of three different versions of Sousa's El Capitan March. The first is from a 1906 recording by Sousa's band. Following that is a 1901 recording by Victor's Metropolitan Orchestra, using a stripped-down instrumentation not unlike the New Orleans string bands. The third excerpt is by the Imperial Serenaders, taken from a 1999 compact disc attempting to capture the timbre and style of the Bolden Band, and they happen to be reading from the same orchestration used by the Metropolitan Orchestra. And do notice in the third example the guitar taking the place of the string bass.
Capitan March, led by the Metropolitan Orchestra.
I'm going to move forward, if you're following along on the handout, past St. Louis Rag and the Gridiron March. Maybe if we have time later, we can come back to that. Thanks to the reminiscences of those who knew him and happened to be interviewed, we have a good idea of what pieces would have been included on a Bolden job. Here are some excerpts from commercial recordings made during the time of Buddy Bolden's career of several tunes known to have been in his repertoire, and I have paired them with present-day repertory performances of the same piece. The first is Funky Butt, which was based on a popular melody that was heard around New Orleans during the time of the Reconstruction. The melody later served as a basis for Theron Bennett's St. Louis Tickle, published in 1903, and still later copyrighted by Jelly Roll Morton as Buddy Bolden's Blues. We will hear an excerpt of a recording by Prince's Orchestra from 1905. This will be followed by Funky Butt, played by Humphrey Littleton as he portrayed Bolden. And notice that he has changed the familiar descending chromatic melody to a simpler, more crude-sounding diatonic one. Bolden certainly did not shy away from the waltz, or in this case, the mazurka. Bunk Johnson, among others, recalled Bolden performing a multi-themed waltz entitled Moon Winks, and we will hear an excerpt of banjoist Wes L. Osman performing it. Following will be an excerpt of Moon Winks, played by the Buddy Bolden Revival Orchestra of Australia.
Banjo solo, Moon Winks, played by Wes L. Osman, Edison Records.
Trying to replicate the sound of the Buddy Bolden cylinder as well, apparently. Manuel Mineta, who was a well-known music teacher and multi-instrumentalist in New Orleans, worked occasionally as a violinist with Bolden. Among the tunes he recalled Buddy having played was Panama Rag. In an oral history, Mineta specified that this was not the famous Panama played by Dixieland bands composed by William H. Tyers, but specifically Panama Rag. We will hear a portion of this piece played by the Osman Dudley Trio from a very rare Columbia 20th century cylinder. Another comparison of vintage recording and repertory. This is a cakewalk composed by Fred S. Stone, a black musician of Detroit. I don't know that Bolden actually played this tune, but it is likely, at least likely enough for the Imperial Serenaders to have included it on their 1999 compilation, Music of the Bolden Era. But first is a performance from 100 years earlier by the Edison Company's Peerless Orchestra. This is a piece entitled Ma Ragtime Baby. And do notice the clarinet playing the lead and cornet playing harmonies.
Thank you.
It is generally agreed that Buddy Bolden's successor as the king of New Orleans' hot cornetist was Freddie Keppard. Keppard, whom we heard from earlier, played loudly, rhythmically, and with a rough edge. He also left behind enough phonograph recordings to give us an idea of his particular style. Amazingly, Keppard's playing is foreshadowed in several dozen recordings he made during the first decade and a half of the 20th century by a cornetist not from New Orleans, but in another port city located about 700 miles southeast. Pablo Valenzuela led his orchestra through popular dances of the day, not quadrilles, but danzones. Here is a reminder of Keppard's style, followed by a danzone by Pablo Valenzuela, recorded in 1913. Could it be that the similarity between the styles of Keppard and Valenzuela is an indicator of Bolden's manner of playing? The evidence is pretty strong, but certainly not conclusive. Bolden's short career came at the end of one tradition in dance music and at the start of another. By the late 1890s, go away. Let me just get the last picture up there. There it is. By the late 1890s, there were still strong vestiges of popular dances from decades earlier, and there is no doubt that Buddy Bolden heard and performed music for such dances as the mazurka, lancers, schottisches, polkas, and quadrilles, among others. But there are many unanswered questions about the Bolden band, particularly regarding the manner in which they played. One question in particular is, what did they record for Oscar Zahn? And if we were able to hear it, what would it tell us? Willie Cornish, the trombonist in the band, said the number they recorded was of the novelty sort. That could mean almost anything, but to me it suggests that it wasn't a typical dance selection. Also, the cylinder is always referred to as a single entity. It makes sense that Bolden probably recorded several selections for Oscar Zahn. We'll never know for sure, but it all makes a pretty darn good story. Yes, I had his dates up on the slide, but didn't have to felt I didn't have time to mention it, but thank you for pointing it out. Herr Lutz. Yes, but we have to have a beer. Mike, what I believe to be the answer is that it was a type of photograph that printed backwards. So the photographer intentionally posed those who would look most unusual, posed them backwards intentionally, so when the photograph printed, it would appear to be correct. That's what I mean. The photographer posed them intentionally backwards, so when the photograph was developed, it would look as though it was correct. There's, like I said, we need a few drinks to discuss the photograph. So yes. Yes, quite fast. It's Tony. Hi. The leader of the band, Daniel Hardy, who's been writing a lot about Bolden, was impressed at the he was trying to get the band to play it more at the inappropriate tempo, because he liked it. The Osman recording is from 1909, so it's considerably later than when it was published, I think 1903 or 4. Not sure. Anybody else? Dr. Rayburn.
I noticed you didn't include any of the Rene Deltas, audio samples.
Uh-huh.
Yet, when they came out, the general consensus, or at least the desired consensus, was that this was as close to Bolden as you could probably get. So what's your opinion on that?
Well, I wouldn't have... I guess I didn't think to include them because they have such a deteriorated sound as far as Rene's condition at the time they were made. And I don't think it would really give a clear indication to somebody at their best. And I think Bunk was playing pretty well, although he had his good days and bad days, and I think Wooden Joe was in pretty good shape. As far as the ensemble sound, I think they are the Rene recordings, Kid Rene recordings, are too informed by jazz that had come about. So. But if had I more time, I probably would have included them.
Great. Okay. Thanks a million. It's always wonderful when David shows up some Saturday afternoon and has a list of records in my collection he'd like to hear. It's always an education for me, which I appreciate.